You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 2014-15 THE World University Rankings podcast special. The very fact that you're listening to this means that the results are now live online. So if you want the full lowdown, head over to www.thewur.com. And they're all there for you. My name's Chris Palmer, reporter on the THE. I'm joined by rankings editor Phil Beatty. Coming up on the podcast, the institutions, of course, that make up the top 10 will be revealed. We'll have the story for Europe, the Americas, Asia, Australia, and we'll also take a closer look at the UK picture. But first, Phil, I sit across from you in the office. I know you're always beavering away on these rankings. So a year in the making, you must be exhausted.
Absolutely, yes. We've come to the climax of the year. It's a very exciting time. We're all fueled by adrenaline, but yes, it's been a very busy year. We really are looking at this throughout the year. We're collecting data in the March-April time. We've got a big survey going out with a lot of analysis. I've been sitting around with the results for a couple of months, number crunching. And it's a huge undertaking. I mean, we're looking, with Thomson Reuters, our data providers, we're looking at, you know, 50 million citations to 6 million research publications. We're gathering the views of tens of thousands of academics and hundreds of thousands of data points. So it's a huge undertaking, but highly rewarding when we reach this stage and we're able to communicate some of the findings.
And that effort is why you always like to press that these university rankings are probably the most authoritative world university rankings that are out there.
Yeah, we've consulted very carefully with the sector. You know, this is the 11th annual edition. We've been in this business for 10 years. I think we've learned a lot of lessons on the journey. We changed the system radically in 2009-10 and consulted with the sector, brought in expert advisors, spent a long time really working out what universities want in terms of metrics, which metrics work, which ones are respected. So I think we've really delivered on the quality assurance side of rankings, because obviously they're always controversial, but we think we've got a range of metrics that really work and that can be unpicked in a really useful way.
Indeed. Well, without further ado, I will quickly run down the top 10. I feel I should have some chart show type backing for this, actually, but let's just dive straight in. Joint ninth position is Yale University and Imperial College London. Then at 8, University of California, Berkeley. At 7, Princeton. At 6, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. At 5, the University of Cambridge. 4 is Stanford University. 3 is the University of Oxford. 2 is Harvard University. And still at number 1, same as last year, is California Institute of Technology. So, you know, even a casual glance there shows that 7 out of the top 10 are in North America. Suggests a good year for the US. I know Canada's top-ranked institution holds firm at number 20. That's the University of Toronto. It's not all good news, though, is it, for North America, if you look at the bigger picture?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, the US dominates dramatically as ever. It has 74 of the top 200. It has, as you say, 7 of the top 10. I mean, it really does dominate these rankings in an extraordinary way. But I think what we are seeing is a slow and modest decline. 77 US made the top 200 last year, so they have lost a few institutions, and what we're seeing is a total overall ranking position for America has slipped about 5 places, and we're seeing really worrying signs of the state universities, the great community universities in the states that have been dependent on public funding, declining at a faster rate, at a disproportionate level. And I think there is a real challenge for America around protecting these great institutions. The private seem to have weathered the storm well. They've got good endowments, they've got a lot of money. The state institutions do seem to have suffered as a whole, and America as a whole has started to lose influence. And this is, yeah, last year was quite a solid year for America, but we are seeing over time this is a trend. America's dominance is waning as new and emerging powers start to push and make improvements.
Yeah, Berkeley, I suppose, sort of bucking that trend of state institutions holding firm at number 8. There's another podcast actually available online if you search it, with the Berkeley president, where he talks about the difficulty of sort of being in that California system and keeping up that level of investment. But I mean, speaking more widely about North America, Canada too has struggled a little bit this year. If you go to the ranking site, you can toggle quite easily between last year's rankings and this year's rankings and see which institutions are in and out. But Canada also lost a couple.
Yeah, the majority of Canadian universities fell, actually, the vast majority. So it's a worrying set of results for Canada. And actually, it's a bit of a tough one to fathom because the latest figures from the OECD actually showed that Canada has become the largest spender on higher education in terms of the proportion of GDP spent on higher education. So Canada is investing. And there's often a clear correlation between the countries underinvesting and the decline of their universities. It makes perfect sense. But with Canada, there's different things at play. I don't know whether there's a problem with the fact that they have a very egalitarian system, which is very admirable. But of course, a lot of countries now are much more clear in differentiating between universities. And that means differential funding, funding some institutions for world-class status and other institutions for more national priorities. You're seeing that happening in the UK and Germany and all sorts of countries across the world. So maybe there's an issue for Canada there. There's a very devolved federal structure in Canada and maybe lacking a national strategy. It's hard to fathom, but Canada has had a tough year, and I think that's a problem because obviously they're really trying hard to increase their international recruitment of students. And
I'm doing well in that as well, that's the thing in terms of numbers, but obviously perhaps this could be a slight kick in the teeth.
Yeah, I mean, it's modest, but it's consistent across the universities, which is, I think that's why it seems quite worrying, because although there's small declines, it's actually consistent across the top-ranked universities in Canada.
Mm-hmm. You said there that that North America sort of dominates these rankings. One thing we always see is that Europe's institutions, if you take the UK out of the picture, don't always have so many representatives. The top-ranked institution from the Europe mainland, if you like, is the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology. That's at 13th, and it's up one place, so good news. But then you have to go all the way down to 29th, to Ludwig Maximilians in Munich, although it should be said that institution has climbed from 55th last year. That's good news for that institution, but why in Europe are there so few universities in the top 50? I think it's four out of the top 50 if you don't include the UK.
I mean, I think there are some structural issues around the systems. You know, the French system seems to be extremely confusing to an international audience. You know, the attribution of research in terms of the complex network of institutions and sort of almost permanent sense of reform, the separation of teaching from research institutions. I think all these things play in. Also, the lack of English language in terms of it being the lingua franca. So there are some challenges around rankings methodologies and the structural issues in certain countries. I would say actually the Netherlands are an outstanding performer. They've got 11 top 200 universities. That is a fall from last year. They had 12. But for the size of that country, it's remarkable in terms of the strength in depth. Pretty much all their research intensive universities are doing very well. And I think that's down to a really coherent policy of kind of specialization, a real sense that universities know clearly their mission and their subject specialisms, and there's not an awful lot of wasteful repetition and crossover. There's real coherence in the system. And actually, Germany has had a really good year, and I think that's probably more cynically down to the fact that in Germany there seems to be a clear recognition that rankings really matter.
They sort of steered away from that a bit, hadn't they, in recent years? They had some small institutions doing specialist things that can sometimes benefit in terms of cracking those rankings, but can sometimes not.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we found this year with Germany, actually, is there's been a coherent movement among some institutions to actually study the rankings and make sure they report their data more accurately according to the rankings data definition. So in some sense, there's a kind of false improvement for Germany that says the Germans have perhaps buried their heads in the sand with rankings. They're recognizing that rankings are hugely significant globally, massively important in terms of attracting students, in terms of attracting faculty, in terms of sort of, you know, the visibility of institutions. And actually, there's been some clarity in terms of how they're reporting and submitting data. So a few German universities have rocketed up purely because they've engaged with the actual data and they're improving data. But also in Germany, you have seen a clear government drive around the Excellence Initiative to pump more resources into a more select group of top institutions explicitly designed to help them compete more. And I think that's something you're seeing throughout the world. There's a sense of actually saying we need to protect and give special funding to an elite group that will be our global competitors, And unfortunately, that does mean there are some winners and losers in that game, but it seems to be a strategy we're seeing across the world.
Mm. Yeah, you can get all the European results, of course, as you can get all the results in general at www.thewur.com. Let's move away from Europe now, though, to a region that has engaged and certainly invested in its HE system in recent years and reported sort of big gains in the rankings because of it. East Asia in particular. In recent years, this podcast sort of spoken about institutions making huge gains on the West. Is that sort of continuing in the 14-15 table?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost been a cliche in rankings that Asia's rising, Asia's coming, you know, they're going to start eating the lunch of the elite American institutions. And it's not quite as dramatic as that this year, but we are seeing continued evidence. There are now two Asian universities in the top 25. National University of Singapore just crept into 25th place. Mm-hmm. Tokyo stays 23rd. And actually, in and around the top 50, although the numbers in the top 50 are stable, it's six as it was last year. We also have one in 51 and one in 52. So there's around eight institutions in or around the top 50. And I think it's not really consistent nation by nation, but individual institutions from East Asian nations have been really outstanding performers. So Tsinghua in Beijing in China has just made another consistent, steady growth. Mm-hmm. National University of Singapore, small steps, but very consistently up and up and up. Nanyang Technological University Singapore has been rocketing consistently for years. Hong Kong UST doing exceptionally well. So we're really starting to see some true Asian superstars making really rapid progress based on a coherent strategy, plenty of funding, good industry links, and actually, you know, a fairly explicit acknowledgement that rankings matter and rankings are something they want to excel in.
And what about elsewhere in that continent, the subcontinent, for example? India obviously always watches these rankings with interest. It has a clear desire to get more institutions listed. Any news for them this year?
Yeah, it's a bit disappointing for India, actually. I've been out there twice in the last year and engaged with the ministers and the university leaders. There's a huge interest in improving their visibility on a world stage. There's lots of policy initiatives and aimed at improving, you know, competitive research funding and improving quality assurance procedures. But we're not seeing it shining through just yet. We've actually lost, in terms of numbers, we've lost an Indian institution. There's still only four in the top 400. And they're not making rapid progress. I think what we will see in the Asia rankings later in the year, that there are a larger number of Asian universities there or thereabouts in and around that sort of top 400-500 mark, but that's not giving them the visibility in these overall rankings. So there's still a long way to go for India, I think, but the signs are positive in terms of the long-term prospects.
Mm-hmm. And how about the sort of near neighbours of East Asia, if you like, Australia, Oceania? They a good year for them?
Yeah, very good year for Australia. I think Australia's been pretty stable across the sort of 4 or 5 years of rankings, but there's been a little bit of vacillation. But this year, most of the Australian universities have made some gains. Melbourne remains number one in Australia in 33rd place. I'm really delighted to confirm just this week that we're hosting our next World Academic Summit at the University of Melbourne in October 2015, which mm-hmm. is really exciting. And of course, the Australian universities are fantastic in their international outlook. They're really strong in student recruitment and faculty recruitment. I think the really interesting thing for Australia is they've got tremendous strength and depth. There's eight institutions in the top 200, but they actually have 20 universities in the top 400. And it shows that it's not just the traditional research elite that are doing really well in Australia. They have a whole range of different types of institution with different missions that are really strong performers. So the reforms in Australia, I think, pose massive questions about how much you'll see the survival of the fittest race where the strong get stronger. But do those really excellent second-tier institutions, can they maintain their excellence? Can they stay competitive? So we may see a greater polarisation in Australia as these radical reforms and the deregulation of fees comes into force, but that's obviously horizon scanning. We're not seeing any evidence of that yet.
Mm. We are obviously a little pushed for time here. If there's any sort of countries not mentioned, as I say, you will find them on the website. Before we move on to the UK, I should mention that Brazil had some good news. Its leading institution, the University of São Paulo, gains ground this year. It's in the 201 to 225 category. There's new entrants for Italy and Russia on the table as well. So do go to www.thewur.com for the full lowdown. But in the UK, we're sat in the UK, so it seems to make sense to dedicate a little bit of time at the end of this to the UK's institutions. The headline seems to be bad news. Three universities out of the top 200, five dropping out of the top 400. Who's getting bad news as a result of these rankings?
Yeah, I think that the story for the UK is a strange one, really, because you do have some real success stories. You've got Warwick rocketing up. You've got, you know, Imperial strengthening its position in the top 10. You've got Oxford and Cambridge comfortably in the top 10, and Cambridge going up, and you've got some individual success stories, but collectively for England, I think you are finding some concerns around the bottom end. So as you said, three universities just slipped out of the top 200. So Reading slipped out from 194th last year, Newcastle slipped out from 198th, and from Scotland, Dundee slipped out as well. And out of the overall 400, you've actually lost four. So Heriot Watt's out, Liverpool John Moores is out, Loughborough and Surrey, really prestigious names, have slipped out of the 400. And I think there is a challenge there around there seems to be an ever smaller, more elite group of British universities doing exceptionally well in the world and holding on. But again, a bit like Australia, can we preserve this great strength in depth? Are we going to see more and more polarisation between the haves and the have-nots, and the elite few and the rest? And policy-wise, how much of a concern is that? We're certainly seeing yet again this real focus on the golden triangle. You know, Oxford, Cambridge, London take all of the top five places. And then you go to Edinburgh, which is the number one for Scotland. And then after that, there's still another strong cluster of London Southeast institutions. So I think there is a challenge. I mean, the Chancellor has talked about it. Can we really restore some big northern powerhouses, make sure there's proper investment and proper talent investment and an infrastructure to draw in talent and retain talent in some of these northern cities, particularly places like Newcastle, where we've seen a slip. And Sheffield, Leeds, Liverpool, they're actually not consistently having problems, but in general terms, there seems to be a long-term challenge for those sorts of cities as well.
Indeed. Well, you can get all the results online at thewur.com. We're on YouTube. If you search there, there's a lovely new video with all the results too. You can, of course, visit timeshighereducation.co.uk, where you'll find our reporters' take on events. And if you visit Twitter, you'll find the university rankings tweeting from at @theworldunirank. So plenty of reading for you to get stuck into if you do so wish. But that's all for this THE Rankings podcast special.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.